listening to 98.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarland. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. Beautiful day here in Minnesota. I hope it is around the world. Thank you for being here. Those of you, our friends and family on KFAI, the KFAI community, and thanks to the people who connect with us across all social media platforms. We're streaming live to LinkedIn and to Facebook, and the two YouTube platforms, the Insight News Minnesota and the Black Press USA. If you're connecting on any of those platforms, let us know. In fact, join us on the program, add your voice to our conversation. We'll put a link up or QR code up. And if you want to add your voice to this conversation, express your concern about the issues we address today, you're welcome to do so. We invite you to do so. This is about us being in community together, and what a wonderful thing it is. What an important time it is as well. You know, over the past few days, like probably most of you, I've been paying attention to what's happening down in Mississippi. I am heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken once again by what has happened with the family of Nolan Wells. And I want to talk about that, as a matter of fact. And before I do today's program, we're going to focus today on Sabathany Community Center, one of the legacy institutions, a great institution, and the great people, the great families involved in creating community that serves community here in Minneapolis. But before I start that interview, I'm going to share with you a couple of minutes of a clip from Ricky Smiley's program this morning on YouTube, where he was, I believe in this clip, interviewing Ben Crump and talking about the status of the case. So let's see, producer, if you are ready, show that piece and we'll come back with the program momentarily.
Unanswered questions so far about this case.
Obviously, the biggest question is what happened to Nolan Wells. I think the reason this case has caught such fire is because they see the pictures, they see the video, and they're saying, hold on, you're trying to tell us just accept this an accident and sweep it under the rug. His mother, Christine, his father, Elmo, say no, they will not allow that to happen. His friends, his community. I mean, he was a good kid. He was beloved. He was a college athlete. He had everything going for him. And so to go on that island for 4th of July celebration and then not to come back is what is concerning everybody, especially when you hear the contradictions.
And you're conducting your own investigation. How will that differ from what the authorities are doing?
Well, one thing, we're trying to be very transparent because the family has some concerns about the state of Mississippi doing an investigation of the death of a young Black man where young white students may be looked at as having some culpability. So the family is concerned about that. So we're going to have an independent autopsy. We have investigators talking to witnesses that have no alignment or no allegiance to the state. And that's important, Lindsay. When you think about Mississippi and the history of Mississippi, you know, this is the state where Emmett Till was lynched.
You mentioned earlier there are some contradictions.
Yes.
What gives you confidence or perhaps concern about the investigation so far?
Well, the fact that they continue to tell the family that we don't see any evidence of any foul play, even though you have students who recorded an altercation why they were on the boats of argument where you had Nolan and somebody yelling at one another on the boat. So that's an issue. And then you have the young lady make a statement and she says, well, Nolan and I finished talking and Nolan said he was going back to the boat. And then the boys on the boat said, no, Nolan told them he was going to stay with her. And so they are conflicting. She's saying he went and got on the boat. They saying he didn't get on the boat. So which is it? And all we know is Nolan is dead.
So, you know, that's all we know. I watched the funeral yesterday, Monday, heartbreaking once again. So I'm interested in how this is sitting and landing with you. If you have an observation, a comment, one of the things that I've been seeing is that there is a super negative pushback from what I would call a racist element in our community, targeting the family, Nolan, his character, also targeting Ben Crump and Reverend Al Sharpton, and sort of asking us why we're concerned about this tragedy and asking us to look away and to say this is kind of business as usual. I guarantee you it is not. Well, hopefully we'll find another comment. I was asking my producer to look for another clip where Ricky Smalley told his personal feelings based on what happened over the weekend. If we get that, we'll show that as a correction. What we did show was posted on Ricky Smalley's show, but he was obviously posting another interview with Ben Crump and another newscaster, so we thank them for that. Let me begin today, though. Finally, if you want to weigh in on this conversation, we want to hear from you, hear your voice, and you do that if you're on any of the social media platforms just by making a comment. You can also join the show by clicking on the QR code. We'll get you in. So listen, let me introduce my friend Neva Walker, and I'll ask Neva to introduce her friend and my new friend, Scott Bread. Both around Sabathany. And the reason I did this intro is because Sabathany has been one of the champions of dignity and freedom and challenging our society to address its wrongs to our people. Sabathany has stood in the gap and has moved the community forward. Neva, it's so good to see you. Welcome to the conversation with Al McFarland. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Al, how are you?
I'm good. Well, outside of heartbroken, I'm well. You know, Clinton College, one of my attorneys, used this as a moment of levity and remind me and say, outside of that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play?
That part.
So this is one of those kinds of moments where, you know, listen, so Sabathany, this is about Sabathany right now, and you are connected. You are a Sabathany baby. I'll call you that.
Yeah.
Talk about what Sabathany is to you, and in the process, introduce Scott Bread. We'll bring him in.
Okay, thanks, Al, for always supporting when I give you a call. I appreciate that so much. So for those that don't know, Sabathany is our landmark on the South Side. Greater Friendship, formerly known as Sabathany Baptist Church. I was hoping to have Reverend Dr. Billy Russell, but he's had some an issue, so he won't be able to join us. Started Sabathany in 1966. And my mama started in 68. I was born in 71. So when you say a Sabathany baby, I am definitely her, along with my siblings. We grew up right across the street where Sabathany is now. In that building used to be Bryant Junior High, where all of my siblings went. And my dad and my aunt went in the 40s. And so we straight up Southside. We rep, I don't care where I live in the country, trust, I'm all 612 Southside, Bryant, Central neighborhood. And I had left Sabathany for a few years after I left Minnesota. But Scott, the executive director at Sabathany, along. He has sparked inspiration for me to come back and support my community center. The things that he in his leadership is doing is phenomenal. It reminds me of my childhood. It reminds me of all the things my mother put in place so many years ago. And so so many of us have left the neighborhood and wonder what's going on. And so this is a perfect opportunity to talk about the past, the present, and where we're going in the future with Sebathany.
Well, one of the architects of that past is my friend and a leader in our community, an elder, Bill English. And Bill was able to jump on this call. In fact, he and I talked last week after we proposed writing and to support me in writing the story, the history of Sebathany, which will be the cover story in next week's Insight News. Also here in the studio, our virtual studio, is Scott Redd, the current executive director of the Sebathany Community Center. Scott, Bill, brothers, gentlemen, good to see you both. How are you?
Hey, Al, I've known Bill my entire life. Like, for real.
And I've known her entire life. She's as beautiful as ever. We talked her into doing some things politically she wasn't maybe ready to do, but she did it well.
That's right.
And so I feel like I helped raise her. That's all.
That is for sure.
Well, Bill, before I bring Scott in, let me have you do the background, set up the backstory, because it's an important one, about the need to create an institution like Sebathany in South Minneapolis. How did it happen?
Okay. I see Neva took a picture off looking. She's looking very nice. I don't know why.
She'll come back in a minute. We'll just take her down. There she is. Okay.
No. Well, let me say it like this. I don't believe there's any malintentions, any malice intent. But if you don't know, you just don't know. And the story's never been told accurately. There's been bits and pieces that, and many of it is accurate. But the beginning start, and I think we have, for this conversation and not too long, we'll start with what was the real beginning. The real beginning was with Stanley King decided he was going to build a church on the grounds. At that time, just at that time, Phyllis Wheatley was the only community center in Minneapolis, and the way was trying to get organized. Stan said, Bill, we don't have a community center in South Minneapolis. I was the member of his church. I was at that time, I was at St. Peter's, AME. But Stan and I had worked together on the North Central Negro Voters League and had worked together with Josie and a bunch of others and Katie McWatt from St. Paul. And so we knew each other and we were very active in the NAACP and other organizations. And so when he said to me, but Stan knew I had worked, came here to go to grad school. Had to drop out of grad school because my wife got pregnant and she couldn't work. So no money, because I come up here with no money to talk my way into grad school. That's really what I came here to do. Because I was working at a federal prison in Maryland as a parole officer. And I was like going to prison every day. And they weren't trying to rehab anyone. So in any event, I said, Stan, I had worked at Allie Q. Brown and Stan knew that. And so Stan said, Bill, you're the only one I know that's worked at a community center and got the right background. Would you help me start it? I said, man, what you gonna do? Build we can't do nothing but a church full of pews. He said, I'm not gonna put no pews in them. I'm gonna build a gym. And we're gonna roll the pulpit in on wheels and we're gonna have seats, chairs for people so we can set up on a Saturday night. In the meantime, you got this gym that kids can work in. And he also put in a two-lane bowling alley. People don't remember that. Put in a two-lane bowling alley, and he bought two houses on either side, one on the 3rd Avenue side and the one next to the church on 38th Street side. One was called the Teen House, and the other one was called my offices, the offices of Sebathany, where I had people like Horace Huntley, Barbara, Huntley as tutors for kids, Mahmoud Al-Qaqati, who was Milton Williams then, had the Malcolm X Center for Youth in the old delicatessen. Neva, who ran that delicatessen before? Their family on 38th and 4th, up with, next to Young Brothers Barbershop. I can't think of the name. No. Schofield. Schofield owned that, and they closed the restaurant down. We put in a pool table and a ping pong table, and we had Malcolm X Center for Youth. Now, I said all that to say, first $100,000 given to Star Tabatni came from a Republican woman named Gladys Brooks, who was president of the city council, and Rhoda Lund wrote a check out for $100,000 because Miss Brooks thought South Minneapolis, which she kind of represented as a Republican. In those days, a Republican could be on the city council. Not these days, but anyway, and I'm not sad about that either, but my point is that she talked Rhoda Lund from the Lund family to give $100,000. Somewhere in the archives is a picture of that check. A picture of that check, because we took it. I knew intuitively and intellectually that Pillsbury was trying to get a foothold in South Minneapolis. But I also know we couldn't operate on $100,000 very long and pay people reasonable salaries. So I said, let Pillsbury be our fiscal agent. Now, I was playing chess at that point. I knew if Pillsbury was our fiscal agent, we'd have less trouble getting money out of United Way as a new startup. I knew that. Mm-hmm. Because I had been working with the United Way, for years. That's when I was in St. Paul. So anyway, the net of it is, to make a long story short, we got that $100,000. I went under Pillsbury as our fiscal agent. 1.5 years later, I said to Camilo DeSantis, I remember that name even, Camilo DeSantis was the head of Pillsbury. I said, Camilo, it's starting to look like you running a plantation. He said, what do you mean, Bill? I said, you act like we can't handle money. I said, we don't need you to fiscal. You helped us out. We're going to extend your partner with you, but you don't need to run it. He said, you're right. And he knew then I had stuck him. He knew that. He knew that I had him over a barrel. So all he could do was say yes. And that's when they got that spot on Chicago and decided to open up the Pillsbury Theater and bought that off. But we were still operating as Tabatni. Fast track, Harry Davis and Richard Green. Harry Davis was now president of the school board. Richard Green was now the superintendent. Prince, all the mothers who went to Warrington where you did, Neva, and you didn't go to Warrington?
No, all my siblings went to Central, and then Richard Green shut down Central.
Yeah, Richard Green came in. He shut down Central, but he also shut down Bryant. And so Harry says, Bryant, we needed, we were trying to grow. But he said, Harry Davis said, look, Richard, let's sell Tabatni for $1. $1 to Tabatni. At that point, I was transitioning to Control Data and Kay was coming in.
Wait, go ahead, keep going.
Yeah, we got that $1, $1, and we owned Tabatni from that point on. Then Kay was hired because he was the organizer, community organizer out of Cleveland. You Meet Us, which had been a program started under Model Cities, was switched up under Tabatni. And Ms. Walker, your mother, came in to run the food shelf and other things. And I think she was also working with You Meet Us. Actually, Cheryl's mom worked for You Meet Us for a while. And it was on, you know where that was, on next to the spokesman. You know where that was.
Yeah.
They had an office there. And finally, they got moved into Sabathany. So, again.
Wait, Bill, let me give you two more sites, because it didn't go straight into Bryant. It went from 38, from the church to 38th and 4th, to up on Lake Street, down to 38th and 1st. Then they moved into Bryant. They were on 38th and 1st when I was in elementary school, where Macedonia is now. And then Jim Cook actually moved, and Yusuf moved everybody into Sabathany, where they're currently at.
Well, as I recall, and maybe I'm wrong, as I recall, it was King. Now, you're talking about a couple of sites into them as they was getting ready to move into.
No. It was bought, but they didn't move into. I just wanted make sure, they were on 38th and 1st for years.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So that's
for years.
So that's the journey it went on to get into the current facility that Scott now Wells manages so well. But in any event, what's most important is three things. The people who I could, let's say, talk about who was against it, because that's just as important as who was for it. The Glantons couldn't stand Sand King. They couldn't stand it, neither one of the Glantons. Mr. Newman loved Stan, okay? Mr. Newman called Harry and said, get behind starting up this community center. I want to put that on the record, because that's part of the record. And once Mr. Newman did, and also Matthew Little didn't oppose it. They didn't like Stan because Stan was more radical. He was a militant. And they were biggies in the NAACP, being like church mouse. Okay, they didn't want to make no noise. South Minneapolis was a growing working middle class neighborhood, and it kind of looked down like they looked down on us on North Minneapolis. We began collaborating with the Way while I was still there, but not the way the Way operated. We cooperate on some things, but not on everything, because we were not the Way, and we weren't trying to be the Way. We were trying to provide services to people, programs, and not be, and you had your activity, your activist kind of stuff going on. No, I should call it advocacy. We were all, how can you not be advocate if you're not, if you're Harry Davis, if you're Richard Green, you're Bill English, you're Stan King, you're all talking about advocates. And so they were the advocates that got behind it. A few of the naysayers, but they couldn't stop it. And Levi, I don't know if you were maybe not old enough to remember, when Stan built those, Al, you remember those houses now called Cecil Newman Plaza?
We covered it in St. Louis, sure.
Remember that? Stan built those and named them for Mr. Newman, because Newman got behind Sabathany. Okay, he said he deserves this. People don't know Stan traveled the country with Hubert Humphrey, when Hubert Humphrey was running for vice president. He traveled the country with him. And so he took Stan all around the country. I know, because I was there. It was in Sabathany's office that Stan King came up with the idea of OIC. That's how what's now called Summit was Twin Cities Opportunities Industrialization Centers, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and an Indian one. So those are all of the things that came out of this embryonic organization called Sabathany Community Center. So
let me take a break, Bill, and bring in Scott Redd. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. We'll weave back in and out. This is great history. This is rich. I could listen for hours and hours, because we need to hear it. And if we don't say it here, it won't be said. So I really, really appreciate the history that you are the repository of, Bill English. You're carrying, centuries of knowledge that manifested itself in the movement of our people towards freedom in South Minneapolis, and really that movement was happening simultaneously around the country. Scott Redd, you're carrying the baton right now. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the conversation with Al McFarland.
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, man. I'm even better because you're here. Jump in where you want to. I mean, what's your first impression? I want to make sure that we amply invite people to the celebrations coming up. We don't want to make sure that people know how they can plug in to the upcoming celebration, but also to support, engage, and benefit from all of the work and programs currently underway at Sabathany. But you know, what's your thought? What's on your mind, brother?
You know, what's on my mind is always that Sabathany's mission is to provide people of all ages with essential resources that inspire them to improve their life and to build a thriving community. And like Mr. English and Neva said, we've been doing that for 60 years. And we do so much of that stuff, man, that we don't stop and celebrate. So this August 8th, is giving us an opportunity to be able to celebrate those folks that paved the way for Sabathany. And I can tell you that made it easy for me to come here from Waterloo, Iowa, and to have a good life.
Keep going.
He's reading something in the chat, I think.
Yeah, maybe your connection is bad. Scott, can you hear me? Neva, jump in. Are you there?
Yeah, I can jump in. Al, I love quotes. I love Black quotes. James Baldwin said, "The great force of history comes from the fact that we carry it within us, are unconsciously controlled by it in many ways, and history is it," right? So that piece for us, even for the Black Party and celebrating Sabathany's 60th, it is a welcome to the community that currently is using the services, understands what's going on there, whether it's the food shelf, the senior housing, the seniors programming, or so many other things. There's so many of us that need to come back home. So it's coming back home, celebrating Sabathany's 60th anniversary. And I think for me, it is so fascinating hearing Bill's history part of the pre-66 even, and then 66 and 67. Because once the fiscal sponsorship stopped and Sabathany became its own 501c3 and Kay Williams, for those that you don't know Kay was this amazing, gentle soul that loved everybody. He hired my mom, who was not a community organizer, and gave her the ability to do anything she wanted. Now, how many executive directors allow that, y'all? And that part of it was really because she had a whole bunch of children of her own, and she knew a whole bunch of other children. And being able to talk to other families, realizing they were struggling with the same issue she was. How do you feed them? How do you clothe them? How do you make sure that when you fall down, you get a hand up? That became the central force of my mom. And even at home, my mom answered the phone, "How can I help?" And so that was the central force of how I became a projectaholic. I'm not a workaholic, with her. And Scott is bringing us to the future. So we have multiple histories. Mm-hmm. We have multiple journeys because we've had multiple leaders at Sabathany. But most importantly, it's always been about the families, the seniors, the young people, the people that make the life of the center. That's always been the focus, no matter who has been leading, no matter the board, the staff. That's the focus. And so, Scott.
I'm sorry. Hold on, kicked me out earlier.
We lost you for a second. No, I think your bandwidth. Before you go back, Scott, let me shout out to people who are liking this conversation. Ronnie Brown, thank you for your heart Hazel Sloan, the Sloan family, thank you. Burhan Ahmed, thank you. Erica Okata, thank you for being a part. And if you guys want to jump on the program, scan the code, we look for you, we'll bring you in. Scott, go ahead.
I was just going to echo what Neva said, is that as Sabathian, we believe in doing with the community and not to the community. So I think that's why we've been so successful, is that I wish I could take credit for it, but as folks, we stand on the shoulders like Bill English, you know, Harry Davis, that, you know, Miss Walker, that came in and said, this is what community looks like. This is what, especially this is what the Black community looks like. And it's been easy for me because I love to listen and I love to turn that listening into action. And we have some smart, I'll say that South Minneapolis is one of the most resilient community, if not the resilient community in the world. Think about it. We've had the murder of George Floyd. We had the ICE came down and all the stuff that's happened to us in this community. But yet this community still stands and stands strong. When the civil unrest happened with George Floyd, we lost over 700 some buildings in the Twin Cities, right? Sabathany, we didn't have not one broken window, not one graffiti, nothing on there. And it's because Sabathany has always been and continues to be a true community partner. We listen with the community. We are the community. We are part of the community. So this is probably the best job. This is the best job I've ever had. And it continues to, I get up coming to work smiling and, you know, I don't drop some pounds, Al, and everything, because this job keeps me on my toes. But I love it. I love it because we got a great community. We got a great community. And the last thing that we want to do is to, you know, to not honor, you know, the folks like Miss Walker, the folks like Miss Snodgrass and Bill English, to put all the work in to make sure that Sabathany stayed. We are unapologetically Black organization, but as I said earlier in our mission, you know, our mission is to provide people of all ages and all cultures with essential resources, inspire and improve their life and to build a thriving community. We do that through a Black lens, and we don't turn anybody away. We make sure that everybody have what they need to be successful. That's the way that Bill wanted it. That's the way that Miss Walker wanted it. That's the way Miss Snodgrass wanted it. And we're going to continue to do that. It's my job to make sure that we continue to thrive for the next 60 years, the next 100 years after Scott Redd is gone, you know, that we continue to make the Sabathany, the folks who made Sabathany great, proud.
I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. Talking about Sabathany Community Center, a legacy institution. And Scott, you know, Bill talked about the embryonic stage of the organization, getting the political leadership of our community and the financial philanthropic leadership to come up with $100,000 to jumpstart this organization. Where is Sabathany now? $100,000 then? I think you are a huge organization right now. Give us the lay of the land. Give people what you put out in a synopsis in your 990, because that demonstrates the strength of the organization, if you don't mind.
Yeah. 4 years ago, we were right around a $1.3 million organization. Now we are an $8 million organization.
Here we go.
And not only are we an $8 million organization, that's not even counting the $12 million that we raised to put a geothermal system in. We are one of the only organizations received funding from the EPA, and that's federal dollars. We're one of the only organizations, one of the only Black organizations that was able to utilize every single of that fund. When this administration came in, they said that we had 30 days to spend $6 million. And I said, if we got to buy that equipment and put it in my backyard, we're going to get that equipment. We're going to get it done. So, We're growing, but that to say that is because folks believe in who we are as an organization. And it doesn't hurt when you have a history of performing, a history of impact that that does good. So, you know, we've had great leaders that came through Sabathany. We got a great board, great community. I always say that we have four great partners, four great assets. One is this building, 188,000 square foot building, over 150,000 people. We're on track right now to have 180,000 people come through this year alone. But last year we had over 150,000 people come through our building. So that's our building. The second is this community. Like I said, it's the most really resilient community that that I've seen. Right. The third is the partners. It's the folks like, you know, Insight News. It's the folk like McKnight Foundation that gives us an opportunity to raise funds and to be able to build a strong organization. And I would say the fourth is the staff. We have staff with lived experience that grew up just like Neva, that grew up in this neighborhood, that's proud, that just want to continue to serve, that can go and do great things in other places, but chose to stay here in South Minneapolis to make this the organization, to make this the community that we knew it could be. You know, so this right now, I mean, I love it here. Coming from a small place in Waterloo, Iowa, where I grew up with a ton of Black folks, you know, this was home to me. When I came here to the University of Minnesota, my mom drove up here. She dropped me right off in South Minneapolis. So I was coming to Sabathany back here when they was having jam sessions and everything else. And when they was playing, when Ralph Crowder was throwing basketball tournaments over here. And I just fell in love. I fell in love with this community. And fortunately enough, the community fell in love with me. So they accepted me as I am. They brought me in. And like I said, I enjoy being here. I enjoy the work that we do, because it's just so much, it's so much need. So when you talk about needs, Al, we put 309 people to help them get careers, not jobs, but careers. These are family sustainable, livable wages where folks are making, you know, I believe 72,000 was the average salary of our folks, right? Because we have great partnerships with folks like Xcel Energy, right? We feed 125 people a day. Look at Bill. Hey, Bill ain't never met a microphone that he ain't fell in love with. Go ahead, Bill.
You stole my grandson's line. What I really wanted to, didn't mean to interrupt you, what I wanted to say to you is this. There is a reason Xcel is making such a significant contribution. It took skill. It took a lot of influencing them to do the right thing. I remember our first meeting with Xcel, Scott. Okay. When we kind of laid out to them that you get a lot of our electricity bills paid here, so you need to be putting a real serious in it here. I remember that first conversation. And you just took it and ran with it. You had strong advocates because the board was behind you. They knew that. And the board stood up. So, and it's not the first time we've been threatened. Okay, you talk about, God rest me, I won't never call her Clarissa, Ms. Walker. But, I mean, she was an intimidating force with a smile on her face. She had a smile on her face, but she would be talking you into whatever she wanted you to do. Okay, so in many ways, Neva got her trait in that regard, because Neva was able to sell herself as a first-time legislator and get things done. And we regret to this day she left and went to San Francisco. And I miss Karen. I miss her. But she was another wonderful spirit and part of your family that we all knew. And she was part of that whole group. Ask Gary Hines.
Hopefully Gary will join us.
How the Sounds of Blackness got started. Just asking. Neva, do you remember Decoy, Determined Ebony Council of Youth? Those are the things that, and Horace Huntley, who became the tenured teacher at University of Alabama at Birmingham, who started the Civil Rights Museum across the street from the 16th Street Baptist Church. I visited that museum, and it's only two places I've ever felt it. The Door of No Return in Ghana and the Civil Rights Museum in Birmingham. Mm. I had to sit down with my wife as I was walking through there because they had the history captured when Martin was trying to build a movement and those three little girls got killed. Mm-hmm. The wonderful effort that Dorothy Bridges' sister, cousin, Ruby Bridges, got admitted to the university and had to be escorted by troops. Remember that Picture of Life magazine? Mm-hmm. Those are all part of the history of Sabathany becoming actualized because nobody knew about OICs except Stan. Mm-hmm. So the reason I'm making this connection, you have to connect OIC, the Cecil Nouma Plaza, you have to connect those to Sabathany. They would not have existed without Sabathany.
Neva, for those who are listening on the radio, we're on screen here on the platforms, but if you can lean left or lean right, there's a beautiful sign behind you. That might be. So talk about Clarissa Rogers Walker. That's and that street sign, and what that means also about the honoring another giant leader in our community, Leuna Newman, the past publisher of the Minneapolis Spokesman Recorder or the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder and the widow of the legendary Cecil Newman, its founder, the dean of the Black community.
Thanks, Al. Bill, let me give you some love for lifting up my sister. It's her birthday today. So our family has been, feeling the impact of her the last few days. For those of you that don't know.
Take a minute and let's talk about her before you do anything else. Let's talk about your sister.
Karen. Yeah, y'all, my sister was, mind you, she was the first Black homecoming queen at Central High School. She was a vice president of the NAACP. She was a communicator and a journalist. Right now we have like the cable shows where you see talk shows and stuff. My sister was on Channel 5 doing interviews with people on Sunday morning. My sister was drop dead gorgeous. And she was my mother's.
You are.
Thank you. She's my mama's first, and I'm the last. And so the beautiful part about it is she didn't think make it that any one of us had to follow in her shoes. She was a Leo too, so she was going to highlight herself no matter what. But she made sure that she supported us in following our own path. We stop now and think about folks being pulled over. My big sister on her own used to stop and pull over when a brother got pulled over by the police, just to make sure that their human rights were being followed. I can go on. And she was a journalist. She did speeches for Mayor Sharon Spelt, and she did all these different things. She used to write for the Minnesota Spokesman, and she was a fashion icon, just like my other sister, Sarah, right? So so today is her day. Mrs. Newman, former council member, Jenkins hooked us up with honoring Mrs. Newman on 38th and 4th, a little stretch, naming that street where the Minnesota spokesman sits today. And our street that we grew up on, 38th and 3rd, after my mama, and we didn't get to celebrate it. We got it honored in December of 2019. Surprise, I didn't want to come home to do no groundbreaking in December in Minneapolis. So we had planned on doing it in the spring. And the two things that happened, COVID happened, and then what Scott just lifted up. George Floyd was killed just a half a mile away from Sabathany, and our neighborhood went up in smoke. And lots of trauma behind that. So we never got to celebrate either street being recognized and honored. And so Scott's team has been helping me figure out how we're going to celebrate Sabathany's 60th at the block party. on August 8th from 11 to 3. Gary and Some of the Sounds are going to be with us. Brother Rob will be with us. Johnny's going to sing. We'll have other activities. And right when we start, before we get started, at 11 a.m., we're going to walk from 38th and 4th to 38th and 3rd to honor these two dynamic women.
It's awesome. It's awesome. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And we're talking about history and the living legacy, the work of Sabathany Community Center and the people at the heart of this work and the tradition that they uphold and that they elevate, building community, loving and sharing, highlighting our culture, infusing the future with the truth of our presence and of our work, of our dignity, and of the reality that we are supposed to be here. That our presence is a gift to this community and to humanity. So I'm glad to have this conversation and these colleagues, companions in this conversation with me right now. And if you're listening on KFAI, send us a note via email or text message, or if you're on one of the streams that we're streaming to, join us with a question, a comment, or show up in person. We'd love to have your voice. Now, open the program with a comment or a piece of an interview that Ricky Smiley this morning had played about what's happening in Ocean, I think it's Ocean Springs, Mississippi, the death and the funeral of Nolan Wells. Tragic. And I want to get your take. I know this is not part of a script, but I think everybody's thinking about it. We all are reflecting on this tragedy, and we all have knowledge that this tragedy is not an isolated thing, that the value of institutions like Sabathany is to try to make it all make sense and to figure out how we get through and get past and emerge, how we reflect the resilience that's required to continue building despite the oppressive environment and the shenanigans and the insidiousness of those who have a bad intention, the people that were the enslavers. And their desire, I believe, to maintain what they felt was a position of superiority that we have always rejected and fought against, that we fight against today, and that we are confident that our victory will lead to loosing, as the church people would say, loosing them of that spirit, of that devilment, of that anti-humanity that their actions represent. If you have thoughts about that and why and how institutions and individuals and families must continue to both be vigilant but proactive in building and protecting our community, I'd love your thoughts. Scott, what do you think? You're shaking your head. What's your thoughts? What are you doing?
You said something that's so important. We got to get out and vote. And I just was on the phone last night with Bill English, and we got to do what we can to for folks who represent our values, who put us first. You know, we got to put, and who look like us as well, to put those kind of folks like the Neva Walkers into office. I think that's so important. You know, I got two young sons, and my heart goes out to the family. You know, I can't imagine. You know, that's, you know, I'm beyond words for that. But we got to have folks who are going to represent us, who's not going to be scared to stand up and say wrong is wrong. And that, so we got to get folks who have a heart, but who have the intelligence and who have the courage to be bold and do the right thing. You know, that's how I met Bill English, you know, fighting at Minneapolis public schools. I was like, who was that brother? You know, so, and I always tell him, I wish we had, you know, a million more Bill Englishes in this world that don't matter what's right. You know, what people say is right. He know what's right in his heart. So those are the kind of folks that we need to be able to stand up. We can't be quiet no more. You know, I said it's a bad thing. We unapologetically Black. You know, we got to be proud of that. We have to be proud, and we got to stand up.
Bill, in your
talk opening, about that murder.
Wait, Bill, in your opening remarks, you mentioned about you made reference to the groundbreaking work of Neva Walker. She hasn't mentioned it, but I think we have to talk about that as well. You talked about positioning her and gently pushing her to leadership. Talk about that, what it meant and what it means, because it was historic.
Well, I'm the best one to talk about it because I was here. Sky wasn't here then. Sky was still in Waterloo. Yeah. Let me talk about Neva Walker.
Go ahead.
Because she ain't going to talk about herself. Let me tell you, Neva, do you understand? You were the first Black woman to sit in the Minnesota State Legislature, as you know. Do you know the Asians and the Somalis got more representation in the legislature than we do? And we're the largest minority in the state. Now you tell me what's wrong with that picture. You were the first woman. I remember Randy Stanton being considered one of the top new legislators in the country. There don't be no Martin Luther King holiday without Randolph Stanton. There don't be no disinvestment in South Africa by the Minnesota State Pension Plan without a Randolph Stanton. Come on now. So Neva ain't gonna talk about herself, but she was a role model there. She did her job, she voted, she spoke up, she advocated on behalf of our people. And let me tell you, we now, the Black woman in the legislature is the one from the suburbs, a Republican, another Republican one, and an African lady, no offense to her, from North Minneapolis, an African lady. Now, look, I got nothing against I'm 55% DNA Nigerian, 30% from Benin by my DNA. So the rest of it is Ghanaian. And then we got some Mongol in there, about 8%. And I don't know where they're from, Scotland or something. But anyway, what I'm saying to you is Neva Walker is not going to praise herself. But I come to praise her because I know what she did. And in terms of beauty, her sister was modeling. And she looks a lot like her sister, okay? But the fact of the matter is, beauty's more than skin deep. Beauty's only skin deep. What made the Rogers and the Walkers was what was beneath that epidermal skin on top, is their inside, their hearts, and their minds. That's what made them different. And that's what made them such wonderful contributors. And it came from the genes of that lady named Clarissa. Okay, and Nate Walker, okay? They came from, I know, I was there. And I knew the Walkers very well because Nate's sister and my family was Cheryl and Ramona's friends. Carl and all of them were friends. They all grew up together, along with Chuck Cooper, the first Black basketball player ever signed by the Boston Celtics. Took his PhD from the University of Minnesota and came here and worked with Bob Williams, whom Neva will know, from Sabathia, the first Black Laker. And his Lakers still do not recognize him. Yet Kobe Bryant came here and took Mrs. Williams to dinner with her daughter, Debbie, you know, Deborah Jones. She's a Jones now, but she was a Deborah Williams then. They acknowledge the role that Bob played. Yet this year, when the Elders celebrated the first three, they didn't celebrate Bob because Bob came in the very next year, hired by the Lakers. So, by the Minneapolis Lakers. So these stories all, as I said, there's this connection. Mahmoud has a way of drawing this, I don't know whether it's eccentric, I'm losing it in terms of just, I can't remember the math model. It is, but it's a way in which these things are connected, and one thing leads to another. And it started for me when I got introduced to the wretched of the earth.
Let me do this before we go. The connection is a great thing. Let me, and I started with the comment about what's happening in Ocean Springs. Let me bring us back to that, and then we're going to close out. Play this part of this clip.
I am saddened this morning by the fact that the young man's parents is going to have to walk down the aisle of that church to bury their son today. And I don't know, but boy, when I tell you, man, racism and the hatred for black people is real. And I was in Florida yesterday. I went to my son's job, and I saw a lot of Argentinians going to the Argentina game. And I saw my son, I had a front row at watching my son deal with racism. And I watched how Argentinians was coming out of that building where my son worked, and how they were staring at him and looking him up and down and making eye contact with him and not acknowledging him. And I could just see the hatred. And just the hate. My son said that the Hispanic community and Argentinians over there, they're so damn racist, so he'd be glad to see white people. That's really bad. And the fact that we got to bury that young man today, and everybody got to live through the same trauma that when they killed Emmett Till, when they killed Dr. King, when they killed Malcolm X, when they killed, just that trauma of racism that black folks have to go through, man. It's just absolutely sad and sickening. And I've seen a lot of it over these years. And they're saying that the FBI is going to get involved. The FBI is ran by the Trump administration. Which kind of justice you think that the FBI is going to give to this family under this particular administration? And I really miss the days, you know, when I wasn't living at the time, but I remember seeing Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and a lot of athletes, man, that stood up for justice and put their whole careers and everything on the line to stand for what's right. And, you know, and man, if I would have saw Ole Miss and Mississippi State players and different players from different football teams put pressure on that state or whatever, because the only thing they can understand is violence and money. They don't understand and respect anything else. But just the racism and the racial tension that you feel all over the country, and the fact that they killed that boy, and you know they killed him. You know they killed him. We all know that they killed him. How? I'm just curious to ask how. I'm not curious of whether they did or not. I'm just curious to how. And what did they do in the cover-up? And it just gives me anxiety and butterflies to know that some parents got to walk down that aisle and bury their son today.
Jared, that's good enough. That's good. Thank you. So listen, we got about 2 minutes left, a minute and a half. Just a final thought, and end with you, Neva, inviting people to the celebration coming up next month. But Bill, 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
That's hard, but let me just say this quickly as I can. It is important that not only to celebrate the 60th anniversary, but what's new about America with black men being killed? Scherner, Goodman, Medgar Evers shot to death in his driveway for registering people to vote. Louiso in Alabama, a white woman, getting killed for helping to desegregate lunch counters in Alabama. So America sells more guns than anybody in the world. America sells more guns.
Scott Redd, 20 seconds. Scott.
I would say that, you know, when we started having these conversations, we thought we was going to get 300 or 400 people to come out August 8th for the celebration. We've got over 700 people that's coming out. So if we can get volunteers, I saw in the chat, folks want to know how they can help. If they can come out and volunteer and contact Jay Fair, that's J-F-A-I-R, at sabathany.org. That would be great.
Neva, 10 seconds.
y'all, Sabathany still needs financial support. Don't think that $8 million just happens. That's $8 million every year. So please consider supporting the sponsoring or donating for the Black Party, and then figuring out how to be a monthly sustainer for Sabathany like me.
We're out of time. My friends, thank you so much. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. We'll see you next time.
Take care.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org, the community's true voice.